Really, what got me was the battery hens in the cages that we were raising chickens in. For some reason, that really stuck with me. And like, I just remember reading and writing about it in a research paper about like them being stuck in these tiny little cages and their toes wrapping around the bottom of the cages and getting like stuck there. And pretty bad. And it really moved me. And I was like, oh, that's it. You know, I'm not going to eat meat anymore.
Yeah, and then in 2015, Carmen and I were both just kind of like at a point like, you know, we want to do more rather than just stop eating animals, stop wearing them, stop, you know, wearing using products tested on them and stuff. You know, we want to do more in this, you know, community and to help animals and stuff. And so we heard of farm sanctuaries, and so we, you know, seeked some out to visit and you know, looked at a bunch online and started following them on social media and stuff. Is this something that you and I could do? I work from home, you know, you have these vet tech skills because Carmen's been a vet tech. So we decided to stay in Georgia and we got our nonprofit registered and we became a 501c3. Carmen actually came up with Farm of the Free, and we got the name registered with the state, and then we started the whole nonprofit, you know, process.
Hello, friends. Welcome and welcome back. My name is Christina. This is Follow Your Kind. I have been MIA for some time, but I am still alive and going strong. I'm getting my MPH degree right now, so I have been busy between school and work. But I have recently interviewed this beautiful couple, and I cannot wait to share this with you. I have Carmen and Greg Pope for you, who are the founders of the Farm of the Free. If you live in Atlanta, you've probably seen their really cool hats or t-shirts or any of their gear. I absolutely love their logo, and maybe you have volunteered on their farm, but they are somewhat of a new kid on the block. I know they've been a part and volunteered for many other organizations, including Full Circle Farm Sanctuary, and now they have their own farm sanctuary that we will be talking about today. And I just think it's really cool because this is really putting your actions where your beliefs are, right? So you have these two beautiful individuals who fall in love, and veganism and their love for animals brings them together. But not only they get into activism, but they go as so far as actually buying the property and starting their own farm sanctuary. I mean, I think it is as real and as true to your beliefs as you can really get. So I was really curious about how did it start and what does it look like? How do you start a farm sanctuary? So a little bit about the Farm of the Free. It is a 10-acre farm. It's about 60 miles east of Atlanta, in the town of Good Hope, Georgia. What a perfect name. Farm of the Free Animal Sanctuary's mission is to create a space where all beings feel safe to be exactly who they are. And some of their aspirations, where are they going to? So while they're striving to create a radical haven of acceptance, Farm of the Free will offer self-care classes such as guided meditations, yoga, cooking classes, as well as classes that raise our awareness about living a peaceful vegan lifestyle with an emphasis on unconditional self-love and personal growth. A few disclaimers: Bunkers is a cat. You will hear us making some jokes about going bunkers at the beginning, and pretty much anytime you hear any kind of awkward silence, that is because we have a cat walking around us and we are trying to give him undivided attention and appropriate pats. There are also some competition happening for the microphone. I only have two microphones. We have three people, so you do the math. And let's see. I also want to note that if there is a little bit of tiredness in any of our voices, that is probably because it's there. The interview ran over 9, maybe 10 p.m., and I mind you, they have a whole farm to tend to. They were gracious enough to give me a tour before we started recording, so I got a privilege to meet all of the 16 animals, 16 farm animals, I should say. There are more animals on the inside of the house that live outside there. I learned some of their personal stories. I got to see their personalities. I learned their names. We also talk about this concept that I learned for the first time. It's called emotional exploitation. So I'm really excited to share that with you as well. And yeah, but still, my favorite part is just how humble and honest and truthful and yet firm in their beliefs this beautiful people are, Carmen and Greg. And they start with their love story, just as all good fairy tales do. So yeah, I'm happy to share this with you and happy to be back on air. Welcome to another episode of Follow Your Kind podcast. It's been a while, but now I'm back and super excited and grateful to have made it to the town of Good Hope today. And I'm at Farm of the Free with Carmen and Greg Pope. Hi, guys.
Hey.
We're fighting over the microphone here, but we also have Bunkers sitting on their table with her back to us, mind you. Hi, Bunkers. Aww. Okay, so just to give a quick picture of what's happening here. So I just got an amazing tour in this farm sanctuary called Farm of the Free. And we went around, looked at and met. I got a chance to meet all of the animals. There are 18 animals here now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got to meet all of the animals. I got to see all of the beautiful headquarters of all of the roosters and cows and donkeys that we have over here. And now we're hosted back in this beautiful home of Carmen and Greg. And we're about to talk of the path that led him here down to this farm sanctuary. So should we start with the love story? How did you guys meet? Who's in charge?
How we met, sure.
I feel like that's you.
Well, I kind of seeked her in a way. So do you remember MySpace?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So this was back in
now.
2007. I was on MySpace looking at a friend's profile while I was actually in the military. I had just gone through basic training in the Air Force, and I was in tech school, which is where you train for your job in the Air Force, and I was in San Antonio. And so I was basically just looking at friends on, you know, MySpace and Facebook because I, you know, was feeling homesick. And so I was looking at my friend's profile and I saw pictures of this beautiful girl with her. And I was like, who is this? And how come I've never met her before? And so I asked her, you know, who this girl is with her. And she said, oh, that's my friend Carmen. She is recently single. And I was like, well, that's great. And she was going to be going to this party that another friend of mine was throwing for me coming home after all the training and stuff. And, you know, where I was going to get like a 2 to 3 week break before going to my assigned duty base. And so she brought Carmen to this party and I met her there. And, you know, we didn't hit it off right away, but, you know, we met and chatted a little bit. And then we had mutual friends also bring, you know, her to another party, and we hung out again. And then eventually, basically I just worked up the confidence to ask her out, and she kept saying no though. unfortunately, but we did hang out
a few times. Good reason. It wasn't because I didn't like you. It was because I'd just gotten out of a long relationship, and I'd always been in long relationships. Uh-huh. And I just wanted to like see if I could just not be and just have some fun. And
yeah.
But he was awesome. He was like the first real gentleman that ever, like, you know, I guess pursued me, which that's so, like, I don't know, that's so weird. It's totally not necessary, but it was nice and it felt really nice. And we just laughed all the time, and like he loved animals, so it's like it was a win-win.
Oh,
and
I love
basically
that.
Yeah, it wore me down. I was like, well, this is, I like him. Like, why aren't I just dating him? You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So eventually she said yes to going on a date. And we did that. And then a few months later, we just kind of made it official. And dated for a little over a year, year and a half. And then in 2009, we actually ended up getting married. Before I deployed to Bagram, Afghanistan, and the rest is history. Basically, we've been married now for over 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an anniversary.
Thanks.
That's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, we celebrated 10 years in February this year, so.
Yeah, it's been.
Yeah, it's
we've been through a lot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a ride.
And believe it or not, like this journey that led us to the farm sanctuary, kind of brought us closer together because we both have like this passion that drives us, and like you know it could either go one of both ways, like one of two ways, like one person get very passionate and annoy the other person, mm-hmm. but luckily we both like had this common passion. We're like, yeah, let's do this, you know. So I feel like. The road right before we started the farm sanctuary, basically going plant-based vegan, mm-hmm. And finding out about, which we can get into more later, but veganism basically brought us together, which I know sounds stupid and cliche, but I swear it did.
No, weird. This is beautiful.
Yeah, it's cool.
And I think it's also so unique because I think, oh, I love Sorry. It. We have
cat
we have,
scuffle.
I love it. Oh, we have bunkers. We're going bunkers here. But I love it because, as you said, you often hear this story where, like, one person is so passionate about something and they want to go and act in New York or something, and the other half of the relationship is something that may hold them back. Yeah. Or you hear the stories about somebody's going vegan and then having to, like, cook side dishes mm-hmm. for themselves yeah. or side dishes for the other family member. And it's so cool that not is only the thing that you have in common, but it's also the very thing that brought you together.
Yeah.
I just think it makes it all so much more beautiful.
Yeah, it's yeah. really cool because around like 3-4 years of marriage, it was rough between us. Like honestly, it was close to like the D word. mm-hmm. But yeah, it was like then like we both love animals and well like I said, we'll talk about it more later, but once we both decided like oh, we should do this. This is, yeah, we really care about this. It, like, mm-hmm. kind of became this thing that we both worked on together. And, like, it was like, ooh, let's try this together. And there's, like, this whole nother world that you think that you're being limited, but then you have, like, all these other, you can try ethnic foods. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many other roads you can go down, as I'm sure you know, but, yeah, so it was really cool. Veganism saved our marriage.
Yeah.
So let's get into the story. So how did that transition happen? Who was first or?
Well, Carmen was first. She was vegetarian since high school.
Yeah. I wrote a research paper. Hated English class, but I have to thank English class for this because it opened my eyes. I did a research paper my junior year of high school, and I hated writing. Couldn't stand it. Not a good reader either. But the teacher was like, you know, you can pick your topic for this one. And I was like, all right. And she kind of gave us some ideas, you know, abortion, like just kind of like, oh my God, controversial topics, animal rights. And I was like,
death penalty.
Yeah. Stuff like that. And I was like, well, I like animals, but what the heck does animal rights mean? You know, I'm like, does it mean like give them the right to vote, give them the right to drive a car? Like I had no idea. So I was like, but I like animals. So, you know, went down that road and then just started learning. Like, it's not really what I thought it was. It's just like giving them a right to be left alone, to, mm-hmm. you know, live within their communities, you know, with the least amount of impact from humans and protect, you know, give them laws to protect them from cruelty and stuff like that. And so really what got me was the battery hens in the cages that we were raising chickens in. For some reason, that really stuck with me. And like, I just remember reading and writing about it in a research paper about, like, them being stuck in these tiny little cages and their toes wrapping around the bottom of the cages and getting, like, stuck yeah. there. And, you know, it was pretty bad, and it really moved me. And I was like, oh, that's it. You know, I'm not going to eat meat anymore. And at that point, I hadn't made the connection between dairy and all the cruelty that's in that. And I was just like, oh, well, you know, nobody has to die for dairy. You know, they get milked and they get to live. And, you know, that's kind of, like, where I stuck. And so I was vegetarian for, gosh, since I was 17 to 28. So what is that?
11 years.
Yeah. And where did you, what were the sources for you that where you were pulling this information for you?
Oh my God, I'd have to pull that paper up. I could give it to you. Oh, I don't know where it is actually. But I'm sure it was like, I think the main thing back then, if I can remember, which I don't even really, they have a bad reputation as PETA. I'm sure I got a lot of information from them. Mm-hmm. That's what sticks out for me. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there was like other like farming. I know that wasn't my only source because we had to have multiple sources, mm-hmm. but I just don't remember them.
No, I'm just curious because like if you think about it, like, conspiracy or what the hell, and none of those things were out yet at that moment, you know. So I'm sure, like, you had probably had to get creative, but at the same time, the fact that you found that information also means that for people who wanted to know, they could know, regardless of what year it was.
And I always thought it would be cool to be a vegetarian, but I didn't know. Like, I really loved meat. I was raised with a family that eats meat. I had only met, like, one vegetarian my entire life, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But then I didn't really, like, go further with it. And then when I had this opportunity to research it, I was like, all right. But I didn't really realize what I was getting myself into. And so, yeah, I'm really thankful for that class, even though you know.
No, that's really cool. How about you, Greg? Pull that mic closer to you.
Yeah, so Carmen was vegetarian when we first, obviously, when we started dating and stuff. And
you were not at that point?
No, no. I mean, I was still, you know, grilling burgers and steaks and all that. And Carmen never bothered me about it or seemed to care or questioned me or anything. So I just kept at it. And I think it was like the end of 2012. Didn't you ask me to do a dare? Yeah, she and dared me to be vegetarian.
Some kind
for
of
like,
a bribe, actually. I don't remember. It was like, if you do this for so long, I'll give you something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember what now, but
it might be inappropriate.
It may be. Yeah, who knows?
Well, I'm just terrible. It works.
So yeah, I mean, I was definitely encouraged at the time, although I can't remember. But I did it. Yeah, for 30 days, and I was stationed at Robins Air Force Base here in Georgia, and I didn't have a lot of options on the base when I was, you know, especially working and stuff. So they had a Burger King on base, and I was mainly getting fries and the veggie burger at that time, which I think was Morningstar that they used there. I'd go to the commissary, which is like the grocery store on a military base, and get like veggie sushi and stuff like that. You know, I wasn't doing the greatest, you know, or eating the best while on that, you know, trial of vegetarianism. And then we had this roommate living at our house, which was in Smyrna.
One of my best friends.
One of Carmen's best friends in Smyrna, Georgia. Well, she lived there, and obviously I would come and visit when I was on, you know, days off and stuff. She had some health issues, and her doctor was saying that she should try, what is it? I don't remember.
No, her doctor recommended getting a hysterectomy. She had endometriosis.
Oh.
So, either a hysterectomy, hormone injections, or have a baby, like get pregnant to help deal with it.
That's obviously a great solution.
Yeah, right? Nothing about changing your diet or anything like that. And this was like when the snowpocalypse happened.
Yeah.
So we were stuck in the house, and she had just gotten off of like not too long ago having like a second surgery to move like an 8-centimeter cyst off her ovaries. And that was like back to back. 6 months prior to that, she had like, I think, a 6-centimeter cyst removed. So anyways, she was living with us, and we were stuck at home because of the snowpocalypse, and we decided to just watch this documentary called Veggiecated.
Yeah, Veggiecated.
And it's not even really one of the greatest ones. Now there's like so many, but we watched it, and we were all just like,
it definitely piqued our interest at the time.
It piqued our interest. And so we all decided to just try, you know, going vegan. She hasn't had to go back to the doctor since.
Yeah. So we watched Veggiecated, and we started kind of going vegan. We did try that whole transition into vegan where, like, well, let's eat what we have in our fridge and in freezer and stuff. And then we watched Earthlings. We actually heard about Earthlings. I think we did some research, like Googling like other documentaries about veganism or something. And so we watched Earthlings, and that just, you know, topped it off. We were just like,
Gary Yourofsky speech, really.
Oh yeah. We also watched the best speech ever by Gary Yourofsky.
The Earthlings, actually, it's great, but to me, it's like one of those things that's just so horrifying. Like, I blocked a lot of it out of my mind. I can only honestly remember one part, and it's probably the worst part, but which is about the fur trade. But I don't really remember much else from it, because it was just like the whole thing is just like, it's just a huge downer. I mean, it's all true. It's very traumatizing.
Yeah.
Only had to watch Earthlings once. I've never watched it again, although we own it. but I've never had the desire to watch it again because I feel like, you know, there's no need because, you know, I definitely stopped partaking in everything that it talks about. So that's where, you know, it drew the line for me mainly. And that was like the beginning of 2013, you know, and back to like our freezer having like, you know, ground beef in it and stuff. And we were like, oh, let's, you know, at least finish this, you know, and all that stuff. No, we just went ahead and chucked it. We threw it out because it was just repulsive to us. And yeah. And so we've been vegan since then. Of course, I think like anybody, we've had, you know, minor accidents here or there, trying to do the best we can when it comes to like researching, you know, what we're going to eat somewhere or, you know, going out to eat and stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then in 2015, Carmen and I were both just kind of like at a point like, you know, we want to do more rather than just, you know, stop eating animals, stop wearing them, stop, you know, wearing, using products tested on them and stuff. You know, we want to do more in this, you know, community and to help, animals and stuff. And so we heard of, farm sanctuaries. And so we, you know, seeked some out to visit and, you know, looked at a bunch online and started following them on social media and stuff. And so we started to visit a few. We went to visit a few in California, the farm sanctuary that's in California, as well as the Gentle Barn and our friends at Farm Animal Refuge in South San Diego. I think it's like Campo,
California. And that was 2013?
That was like 2013. No, that was like 2015. 2015-ish, yeah.
Were there not farm sanctuaries in this area at the time?
Not really, no. There weren't any that... Wow. Yeah, because Full Circle, that's here now, they were in Asheville at the time. Mm-hmm. And we actually tried to visit them when we went to visit Asheville for our first time.
Well, we should probably preface, we were in California visiting family.
Oh, okay. And I was like, we didn't go there really just for that. Far away to find farm sanctuary.
Yeah. While we were visiting family in California, we visited the three sanctuaries out there. Yeah. But yeah, we did try to visit Full Circle while they were in Asheville at that time. We went to Asheville for the first time, fell in love with it, of course. And we weren't able to visit Full Circle at the time because one of their first resident pigs that they have, Penny, who's still there, she hurt her foot, and so no one was at the sanctuary because they had to take her to the vet or something. Yeah. So we didn't get to visit. Then we did visit some small sanctuary that's out there now called Animal Haven, which is a cute little sanctuary that's in Asheville. And that's pretty much all the ones we visited. But, you know, after, like, looking at them and stuff like that, we were just like, man, like, you know, is this something that you and I could do? I work from home, you know, you have these vet tech skills because Carmen's been a vet tech, you know, for, I don't know, 15 plus years. You know, and, we, you know, have always loved rescuing animals. We've always had this passion of rescuing animals. You know, since we've been married, we've rescued dogs, cats.
So even before you were vegetarian or vegan, you were rescuing dogs and cats.
Yeah, like Bonkers, you know, that you met. She I rescued her in 2005. So, I mean, even before I ever met Carmen, I was, you know, had a passion for adopting, you know, rather than buying animals and stuff.
So I want to put a plug in this but really quick before we go forward with a farm sanctuary, because it sounds really interesting to me. I can definitely relate to that as well, how before I became vegetarian and then vegan, it was so easy for me to love the animals we were supposed to love.
Yeah.
But then somehow, like, we have this construct and do this mental gymnastics to justify why it is okay to, like, love some animals and then eat others.
Right.
How did you feel about that? So, like, once you became vegetarian, well, I think for you, Carmen, it probably was easier because you became vegetarian early on. So maybe you had that realization earlier. But for you, Greg, so how did you feel like once the doors kind of opened, you're like, oh, it doesn't make sense for me to eat these animals either. Did you make the connection that was like there all along? You just had to unlock it to include other animals in the same pot as well? Or
no, I don't think so. I mean, I feel like I never had the connection, like, you know, because I never met pigs or cows or anything until we visited a farm sanctuary. You know, I obviously was like, I would never eat a dog or cat, but I never put the connection of like, and a lot of people don't, you know, because they don't see behind the curtains with factory farming and stuff. So I never, you know, knew what was going on in factory farming.
Being from the city, like, you don't get to experience like farm animals. They're just like, you know what I mean? Stuff that you hear about, or, you know, you're just brainwashed to like, these are for food, you know, dogs and cats are for petting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is that what you're asking?
And that's why Earthlings was so eye-opening to me, because I had no idea like this was going on, you know, like a lot of people, I feel, you know, like I had no idea that these animals were, you know, living in such small captivity, and then it was short lives, and then being slaughtered and you know, such inhumane ways. And, you know, for our food and, you know, to eat and also to wear. And, yeah. And I was just like, this is like so messed up. So I never even
thought about it
until I saw those documentaries.
Because to me, and I'm just like looking at you intently, because I'm trying to understand and imagine myself in your shoes. Because I think my story is just a little different, because I wasn't like hanging out in the village my whole childhood, but I did spend some time with the animals. And for me, it was always like, well, I know your name, but I also know that at some point you're going to be in the soup.
Yeah.
And it was like always so, like, it didn't make sense for me, but I feel like because everybody, like, I would look around and everybody else acted normal about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I guess I'm supposed to be normal about it too. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, it still makes sense. Well, now it makes sense, like, why I felt weird before, why I didn't feel right before, and now I can kind of include all of the animals in my circle of love. Yeah. But it's also, I guess it's just harder for me to understand the perspective of people who maybe didn't see the animals growing up.
Because, yeah.
Like, you still, when I drive, like, on the highway or something, and you see, like, these billboards where they're, like, a pig and a chicken playing cards and some barbecue place. I mean, that's obviously an animal, even if it's cartoonish, but it's still an animal, and you're still realizing that you're going to eat that animal later.
Yeah.
So,
strange.
Like, it's hard so for me strange. To understand how how does it work. You know, it's kind of like, you know that it's animal, but you don't really know because, I guess, you haven't met one in person. Is that how it is?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Like, I never, you know, interacted with any farm animals ever or anything like that. I mean, I was actually kind of like an asshole when I was a little kid. I mean, I used to fish. I never got into hunting, but I fished. And I was also one of those kids that, you know, would like use a tennis racket to like hit bumblebees and stuff with, and was just like, you know, going out of my way to like maybe stomp an insect or something like that. Now, I mean, we, you know, go out of our way to make sure an insect doesn't die if they're in our house. You know, we have like little bug cups and stuff that we like scoop them in and, you know, rehome them or take them outside or something.
Yeah.
So.
It's interesting because I feel like it just like kind of depends on like your personality, maybe your upbringing, and like if you were taught to be compassionate. Because like, yeah, in my house, like I had the same questionings kind of like you.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really live near farm animals. But like I remember being at a bus stop when I was 5 and this kid was just like stomping on the ants and I was just like crying.
It could have been me.
It could have been you.
No, it wasn't.
I think it just kind of depends on your personality. And, like, some people just kind of have to, like, they're here to question it. And then other people maybe start making the connection based off, like, certain people shining a light. Like, hey, look at this. Why don't you look into this? Why don't you, you know what I mean? Like, and Greg, you know, was like, so many of us were just kind of, like, following orders or just doing what everybody else is doing. You know what I mean? But I think so many people would be willing to change if they actually knew or, like, asked those questions. Like, why are we doing this? Like, how did we get duped to be doing these hurtful and horrible things to other beings, even insects, you know?
So. Yeah, exactly. I think this is exactly what I'm after. I think I've been on the hunt and still am on the hunt to understand what it is exactly that helps people change and come to this awareness, like how Greg can be so humble and honest about how he used to be not the nicest person to the animals, and now you guys like rush to save the little bumblebee or a little ant, you know, like it takes a level of awareness. And it's interesting because it seems like the people who claim they know the most and they're so confident in their beliefs that they know exactly what they know are the people that also are probably stating that because of their fear to face what really is there.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your transition like? Like when you went vegan from vegetarian? Because you were vegetarian for 11 years before you became vegan.
Oh, yeah. For me, oh, gosh. It's kind of embarrassing because my passion just kind of grew and kind of took over, and I didn't really have a lot of self-control. and I drove several people away, like my family. Mm. Luckily now I'm finally like mending those bonds and trying to repair those bridges. But yeah, it was just like it kind of took over, and I was kind of blinded by my passion and didn't have that balance that I think it requires, because you're not going to do the animals any good if you push people away. And in my experience, and I think there is a way to do it in a loving way that's not shaming people, and that's what I was doing. You know, I was shaming people, and it's embarrassing to talk about, but that's what happened. And I'm just really glad that, you know, I'm gonna talk about a woman that I met in an Asheville Veg Fest, Ren Hurst. And she might be somebody you might actually want to interview. She's amazing. Yeah, she was on our board. She taught us a lot about the emotional exploitation and the reasons to animals. Like, so for instance, like, you know, petting an animal without asking them for permission or stuff like that. Like, because it's still with the mentality, like, they're here for us. And that really isn't love, which really isn't vegan. Because even as a vegan, I was like basically forcing myself on my animals, you know? I'm like my beginnings, like ideas for having sanctuary is like, oh, I'm going to rescue all these animals and I'm going to basically hopefully get them to fall in love with me, quote unquote, force them to love me. And then when people come and meet them, they'll get to have these amazing interactions and see that. But I was totally like, for lack of a better word, just kind of like steamrolling who they are as a person or as a being, and not giving them the opportunity to go at their own pace and holding the space for them to, you know, get through whatever they need to get through to reach their highest potential, basically. And I heard her speak.
Blew my mind away. This is such a cool concept.
Yeah, I really urge you to look her up. She wrote a book called Riding on the Power of Others. She's she used to be like a six-figure horse trainer and trader in Texas. And now she's like probably the only true vegan I know, based on if you include emotional exploitation, which I think you should. Unfortunately, I'm still, you know, working on it. I'm aware of it, but it's really, really hard because like you basically have to stop and think about every action that you have with the animals. And even like having them here, like on display at the sanctuary, there's some exploitation going on. But yeah, she really, that's the book that talks about how she got to the point where she is now. And, she has a Patreon now and it's called Sanctuary 13. And basically she offers like these interspecies, communication and like workshop type of things. And it's really awesome. Like, part of my continuing education as an employee here is like we support her and I get to be on these calls once a week and it's really awesome.
This is really cool.
Yeah.
So emotional exploitation is basically, or rather to abstain from emotional exploitation is allowing the animals the space to express their own personalities as they please, rather than like forcing our own affection or whatever it is on them.
Right. And there's a lot of like nuances and stuff that it's like really, it gets really kind of complex and really difficult to work through. I mean, like I said, I'm exploiting the animals every day. Like I just know it because there's certain things that like, I don't know. It's really hard. Like for instance, when they have to have work done for their care, you know, I have to do things that they don't want, but it's for their best interest. And it's tricky to navigate, but I think it's something that people, when they're ready, should at least look into and become aware of it. A lot of people, I'm sure, think it's, you know, probably too difficult or something like that. But I think people should explore it with an open mind and consider taking steps towards that as soon as they can.
I feel like it's also would be a very useful concept applied to your family members.
Yeah, and it can be applied to people too. I have a thing here that I keep on my table. It's basically like these 13 rules or whatever that help you have these more, golden rule type relationships. Principles to reach like this true love between all relationships. But she's really mastered it with animals, and that's where she speaks to. But it can be applied to humans as well in all relationships. Really cool. Yeah, it's really awesome.
I love that. That's a great concept. Okay, let's get back to your story. So you are looking at different farm sanctuaries all the way in California because there's none in Georgia.
Yeah. So we thought we were going to be this first sanctuary in Georgia.
2015. So you're seriously, at that point, you're what now, 2 years vegan? You're seriously considering opening a farm sanctuary at that point, like 2 years?
Yeah. So, because, again, Carmen and I have always had this love and passion for rescuing animals and stuff, even before veganism. And in our early stages of veganism, we actually rescued some 3 lab rats from Georgia Rat Rescue. And, you know, they were just amazing. And we wish we could have done more, you know, for them and stuff. But we were also what we call, you know, kind of rescuing in air quotes, feeder goldfish too, although we bought them, you know, for what, a dime. But, you know, instead of them being sold to someone else for, you know, food for another fish or something, we, you know, put them in our big tank that we had and let them live out their life, whatever length it was, you know. So that was like
small. I love it.
Yeah, we kind of started small. I mean,
and now you have 10 acres of land.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't called Farm of the Free then, but you know, that was before.
Where that was a tank of the free.
More like plantation.
Fish of the free. I don't know what you call it, but. Yeah, I mean, and then, of course, you know, the dogs and cats that we've also rescued together and before. But in 2015, we saw some sanctuaries, and we just kind of thought of the idea of doing that. And we only could have done it, I think, because of my job and Carmen's background and stuff. And so 2016, Full Circle came to Georgia, which we were thrilled about, because then it gave us the opportunity to go there, like, you know, volunteer. Constantly. So, I mean, we were there, like, I think within the first week they moved, you know, and to allow, you know, the first like time they started allowing volunteers, and we were there from the get-go, and we were there the first time when they rescued their first cow, Sylvia, and it was just such a beautiful moment. And then when they brought Dougie to the sanctuary too, we were there bottle feeding him and everything. So I mean,
and we got to volunteer a lot, and we also, like, in situations where we weren't able to help, like in rescuing animals, we were able to help go transport animals for them. So we actually got 2 of their cows, Kelsey and his mom. I can't remember what they named her, but we went to help transport her and him from their bad situation.
That was such a beautiful moment too.
It was amazing. It was so amazing. Getting it, we were there all day, stuck in the mud. Like, the truck was stuck. We had to do all these things, and we finally like lined the truck up to get the mom, and she was just terrified. She was terrified and wouldn't come. And so we thought to just get the baby and put the baby on the trailer. And she wanted so bad to be with her baby. And she ended up just jumping on the trailer just like that after we got the baby. And it just made us think of all the moms that are separated from their babies, you know?
And she kind of was, because she was separated from her calf.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, they're not even that bonded, they kept saying. Yeah. And we were it doesn't like sound like, you know, they're not, you know, because she was crying for her. He was crying for her and everything. And so they were crying for each other. And yeah, the only way to get them on the trailer together was we sadly, you know, had the calf and we put her on there, but it lured her up there because she wanted to be with him so bad.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was the only way that, that was the only way that made it work. And so.
So how does it? I'm really curious. So you rented the truck, or you rented?
No, we had the trailer and the truck at the already. This was after we started our sanctuary, moved here. Actually.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry to put the timeline out of order. Actually.
Oh, that's
my fault.
No, so I'm really curious about like the rescue process or like the rescue instance. So you take a trailer, you drive to this location where you know that the cow was and the, and her calf and.
Yeah, this was all the way in North Georgia, and Full Circle asked us if we could do that because they didn't have a trailer, or they didn't have a truck, I can't remember, at the time, mm-hmm. and we said that we could, you know, help transport them, and I think it was like one Saturday morning or something, and it was raining,
it was a Sunday,
and we had to work the next day, and it was Sunday, and this was when
8 hours of driving.
Yeah, we drove so long. We were stuck there for like hours and like
in the mud.
Uh huh.
And it was dark by the time we got to Full Circle.
Yeah, it was all worth it though.
It was totally worth it. It was totally worth it.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, like it's been an adventure, and it's a lot of work. It's totally worth it, but you learn so much about stuff that's just not really shown to us, and kept, you know, it's kept hidden for a reason. You know, so
like what? Let's get into that.
Like, for instance, like seeing the mom and the bond between the mother and the baby, like that was just like wow, like that was a magical moment. Yeah. You know, and there's so many moments like that, you know, most people don't ever get to experience, and it just sucks because they all have like this will and passion to form bonds and make friends, or maybe not, just like people. It doesn't matter, but they should have the right to be able to do whatever they want, you know, within reason, you know.
Yeah, get a chance to express themselves. It's really interesting that that's what you bring up. I've spoken to several people, and one that comes to mind is Dr. Pamela Ferguson. You may have heard of her. She's from Canada. She's a registered dietitian who is super passionate about plant-based diet.
Cool.
She's cool. And I was interviewing her about a year ago, and she was telling me how she works a lot with she does coaching and she does consulting as a registered dietitian online.
Wow.
And she was saying how she works with a lot of women who a lot of them go vegan as they get pregnant or right after they have a baby, because as they become mothers, they realize the strength and the importance of the bond between the mother and the child, and they say they just can't continue eating meat or doing dairy products anymore because that just becomes so much more obvious to them.
Right.
So I just always find that interesting, because there are so many, I feel like there are different moments in life when we become so much more like vulnerable and so much more open to receiving some of the information.
It's interesting.
And it's so beautiful that when we're able to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely like a timing thing, you know, and like where you are. And we're just here to hopefully speed that up for the animals.
I love
you
that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. So how did it come about? When did you make the move to buy the land, to get the name, to get the nonprofit? How's that all happening?
Oh, Greg is
so going back to 2016, volunteering at Full Circle, and learning so much from the previous executive director and founder of Full Circle, Kayla Warden.
She took us under her wing, and like
she did. She took us under her wing, and she still talks to us and helps us out a lot. And but we learned so much from her. And Daniel Sweeney and stuff,
you know, the entire organization,
everybody at Full Circle.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they're all amazing.
You know.
Yeah. And so we were there, you know, almost every weekend, helping out when we could, doing so much and everything. And then in 2016, we weren't sure we wanted to stay in Georgia. So we also, took another trip out to California thinking, you know, maybe we can move out there and start a sanctuary, although there's so many, but we have some friends out there and stuff, and California is just such a cool state anyway. So, I mean, we went out there and realized that, nothing is affordable for us out there unless it's in the desert.
Yeah.
And then we even thought about Asheville and all this stuff, and, you know, it was also a little too expensive for the type of land because it's really hilly, and we didn't want, you know, anything with hills, because that's also one of the reasons Full Circle left, because they were on a hill and they had, you know, some injuries for the animal from the hill, because, you know, to the animals. So And, you know, so we decided to stay in Georgia. We also realized we have such a pretty big, you know, following already and a, you know, good backing and everything.
The community here is
vegan community and just the community that, you know, loves animals.
And our, just our friends and family.
And so many
really
friends.
Supporting us.
Yeah.
Even non-vegans.
Yeah.
Supporting us.
Yeah.
It's exactly. And so so we decided to stay in Georgia, and we got our nonprofit registered, and we became a 501c3, and we kind of like dabbled with names. I think the first name we thought of was like Freedom Farm Sanctuary.
Yeah.
And then we realized there's a gigantic Freedom Farm Sanctuary in another country, and we're just like, well, that's, you know, we don't want to, you know, step on their toes and stuff. So we wanted something more, you know, original and you know, one of a kind. And so Carmen actually came up with Farm of the Free, and we got the name registered with the state, and then we started the whole nonprofit, you know, process, which was kind of a tackle. We got as far, you know, we got as far as we could. We got a couple steps done, and then we had to hire a lawyer to do the rest, you know, and then we became, you know, an official 501c3.
And he's great.
Towards
if
the
anybody
end of,
wants to do a nonprofit, we recommend him.
Yeah. Robert Bexley, shout out.
Yeah.
I love it.
And so we actually were in the Veg Fest in 2016, the Atlanta Veg Fest, and, you know, I think we had just become a nonprofit then. And so we were like just kind of getting our name out there and everything. We were telling people we're trying to sell our house in Smyrna to find farm
people
property.
Were giving us money and like supporting us and like just like, yeah, asking us and giving us advice. And we didn't even have a single farm animal or land.
Yeah, we didn't even have an animal. We didn't have the land.
Communities.
I mean, they were just taking our word and trusting us, and which, you know, was amazing.
Yeah.
From, you know, that type of support. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it took about 6 months to sell our house in Smyrna because, I mean, you know, we tried to sell in the end of 2016. It was just bad timing. We took it off the market for like the winter break and around Christmas and New Year's. And then in 2017, we listed it again and, you know, had an offer in 24 hours. And so then at that time we started, you know, really looking at farms, and we saw at least a dozen farms in Georgia, and we kind of wanted to respect Full Circle being in the south of Atlanta. So we looked at, you know, east, west, and north and everything. And so we saw, you know, farms that, you know, just either needed so much work and the house was great, or it was like the opposite where like the house was, you know, a lot of work and the farm was great or something. And, you know, obviously we needed both because, you know, for one, you know, fencing's really expensive. So we kind of wanted a head start with like somewhere that had good fencing, mm-hmm. at least a few structures, on the property already. And then of course we needed, you know, a decent house because I was working from home and that's where we're living. And so, this was, yeah, here in Good Hope, we found this place. It's 10 acres.
I just love the name.
Yeah. The town Good Hope. I mean, we didn't really even think of it until someone, I think, pointed it out to us, and we're just like, oh, it is a cool town name and just a great spot, you know, for
Absolutely.
Us and stuff. And so, the place has already, you know, a lot of good fencing and structures and stuff. So,
it was a farm before.
It was like they had two horses, you know, but they did so much fencing, and there was like already two good structures here and mm-hmm. stuff. So, it just had the whole package, and we put an offer, you know, on it and wrote them a letter with our
plan
on what we, you know, wanted to do and
stuff.
And
they went with our offer because they really liked animals too.
And they had
they
another
like
offer.
Cats and stuff. And
oh,
so they really liked
so
the
cool.
fact that we like want to rescue animals. And
yeah.
That's why they picked us over the other offer. So,
well, yeah, is what we
the
like to think.
The
universe
conspires.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that was like April 2017. And then we moved in the house in May 2017. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, since then we've rescued 18 animals. No.
18 animals. Before 18 animals, is there like an established like date for the founding date for Farm of the Free, or is there like
May?
Anniversary?
Well, there's the date when we became a nonprofit, which is, was it May 1st, 2016?
It was like May 2016. They were both in May, surprisingly.
Yeah, and then it's coincidentally, we moved out here a year later in May 2017. Or end of April, beginning of May.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of about a
That's
year
really
apart,
cool.
but
Yeah.
So May is the month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Who knows what will happen next May?
I love it. Okay. So, and then you move in here in May 2017, and you don't have animals, any rescued animals, well, farm animals at the time. Right.
Yeah. We just came with all of our dogs and cats. And the house did come with two chickens, or three chickens.
They were the neighbor's chickens, but they were technically, all
grown. Technically, they were the neighbor's chickens. But I mean, the people that we bought the house from, you know, were even like, oh, the house even has chickens already, because we talked about what we were going to do when we did see the house for the first time and when we met them. And they were like, we feed them and we give them water and stuff, but they're really the neighbor's chickens. And it was a rooster and two hens. And once we moved here, they were still, you know, coming around. And, you know, we were like, well, I guess we should get, you know, food and water for them too. And so we did, you know, we started leaving food and water out for, it was like a stray cat, you know, it was like, we started leaving food and water out for them too, but they would go back towards the neighbors and they would perch up in a tree that actually is at the fence line in between our house and the neighbors. And that's where they would sleep at night. And we were just like, well, that's not safe, you know, like,
oh
yeah. And we saw them do that for like a month. And then we saw one of the hens disappear, or we just noticed she wasn't around. And we were like, oh man, she must have gotten taken from a predator or something. And so we just, you know, felt really bad. And so, 30 days later or 3 weeks later, that's like the process of, you know, the eggs being fertilized and being hatched, with hens. Right.
Are you wanting me to talk?
Is that right?
I feel like you're slowing down. It takes 21 days for.
Okay. Carmen, it's your turn to pick up the mic. Okay.
it takes 21 days, for baby chicks to hatch from eggs after they've been fertilized and laid. So Clucky comes back. I'm out of town.
We named her Clucky.
Clucky comes back and she has.
Wait, so this is the hen that was missing that you thought was.
Yeah. This is before we had any fencing. Clucky. Yeah, and we didn't have like a lot of funding yet or anything like that. The chickens were like free range. And so we wanted to do something quicker, and we hadn't even talked to the neighbor really about adopting them. We wanted to adopt them, but we just didn't know what we were going to do. And she shows up with, you know, all these babies. And so basically now we have a total of 5 roosters and 4 hens from 3. So, oh,
that's
yeah.
That's how they arrived.
Yeah. Well, and then we just recently rescued another hen that you saw out there from Tennessee, who Ricky from Full Circle connected us with. So that's how we came to,
get them. And those, let's talk about them for a second, though, because I think it's easy to assume, like, a lot of people think that, like, birds have no brains and no personalities, but I just met all of them, and there were no two birds that were the same. Like, no two birds looked the same, no two birds acted the same. Like, every rooster I met had his own, like, style and swagger around them. Everybody had their own color, like, this badass. What's the hen that I really like?
Ahsoka,
yeah. That girl had some attitude, but that was so cool.
She's
like,
very confident.
can you talk about like the personalities of the hens and roosters that have?
It's something that I just wish so many more people could get the chance to just witness.
Well, that's why we got the bench out there to like sit and just observe and watch them. And since we have put that out there, I mean, we've sat out there so many times and learned so much about them and their languages and stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool. They have it's very complex, you know, we don't even understand it. Like, there's so much we as human beings just don't even comprehend, but they have their own language. Like, they have different sounds that mean different things, and I'm not even going to pretend like I know. I can just observe and kind of get a pattern, but I don't really know, you know. They talk to each other. They have you know, some are more interested in people, some are less interested in, you know, people. And the males, generally speaking, tend to want to take care of like a flock. And it's really cool because Dennis, who was the first rooster that came kind of with the property, as we were saying earlier, He, if he finds food or something like that, he'll make a noise and kind of wait for the females to come over, and he'll let them eat first, and then he'll eat once he sees that, you know, they've had enough. Yeah. And if he, you know, finds something, sometimes he'll even hand the food over to the female. It's really cool. And they do this thing called tidbiting. So, like, when they find something, they'll kind of point to it with their beak. Mm-hmm. So it's just like they point to it over and over and over again, and they make this noise. It's like dit, dit. It kind of sounds like Morse code. They're like dit, 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 dit. It's called tidbitting, and they do that, and it's really cool. And so, like, the roosters that don't have their own flocks yet, if they find something and we happen to be in there, they'll do it to us, and hoping that we'll eat it. I don't actually know, but that's just based on
that's
like
what it seems.
Yeah, my experience with them. And it's like, you know, if I see a ripe blueberry, I'll throw it on the ground where Radke is, and he doesn't have anybody in his area. And I'm like trying to give him the blueberry, and he's turning around trying to give it back to me, and I'm like, no, you eat it. It's so we kind of, you know, go back and forth. But anyways, they're so cool, and they're so complex, and it's really hard to like explain everything here. Like, it's almost like something that people have to experience and observe, and just go out there without any expectations and just kind of see what happens. It's really neat.
Yeah. I love it. That's really cool. What are some of the other animals that you have and how they came on board?
So Charlie was like our real first rescue. He's our Mammoth Jack donkey, and he's like, in his late 20s. And he came, we rescued him from, Alpharetta. So he was actually posted as a free donkey on Craigslist, and we've been told that, you know, some people will take these donkeys that are posted on Craigslist for free, and they actually will send them to Mexico to become slaughtered for
meat
like
China
and stuff, for like, you know, other countries.
Weird, yeah, there's like a whole weird secret trade that's not really discussed.
Yeah, I actually saw a post on Craigslist.
Are you
like
serious?
Yeah, a while ago I saw someone actually post on Craigslist like warning people about posting about donkeys and horses and stuff. Yeah, it was interesting. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. So that wasn't like the main reason why we rescued him, but you know, we did want to first start with like equine and stuff, because that's what the people had before us. Equine, which is like horse or donkeys.
Okay, and mule.
Yeah.
Over here.
Yeah. So I mean, cause since that's what they had here, you know, that was like we thought would be the
fencing setup,
you know, right? Easiest to start with. And so the guy was getting rid of Charlie because he lives out in Alpharetta in like this small 6-acre farm, and Charlie was getting out of his farm property into these really rich $1 million home neighborhoods and just walking around the streets and stuff and
hee-hawing.
You
heard him. He's not the most quiet.
Yeah, as you heard, he's got a very loud, you know, hee-haw, and
it's music to our ears, but you know,
sure. We love it. The neighbors say they love it too. Yeah, so but he, you know, this was like $1 million homes, and he's just walking around
breaking fences too,
breaking
other people's fences in other neighborhoods. And so basically somebody called animal control on him, and the guy had to keep him in like a little stall and was only walking him like twice a day. And they need tons of room, so that
he had to walk
him
with a lead. Yeah, twice a day, because he couldn't trust him to like let him out, you know.
Yeah.
Out free range and on his property anymore, because he would just break out. So, so sadly, and the guy didn't really want to get rid of him.
Yeah.
He was really attached.
You can tell he
and
was really taken care of. Like,
yeah,
donkey.
He actually followed us out here when we used the animal trailer to go out there to pick him up, and he followed us back here to see, you know, the property and everything, and you know, was really happy where Charlie was ending up at.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the second time actually someone's done that. You know,
does he still come to visit?
No, sadly.
I think he had some health issues too. He was an older gentleman, and his son was actually there helping him. I think they're just trying to get everything in order for him for whatever's to come in his next stage of life. It seemed like to me, but
that's cool that Charlie's here with you guys.
So Charlie was our first rescue. For Farm of the Free. And we kind of like to call him our sanctuary Buddha, because he's just so calm and chill, you know, when you approach him and interact with him.
Sanctuary Buddha, I love that.
Sanctuary Buddha.
Yeah.
I love that. What about our models? Johnny Cash and
we have Supreme and Johnny Cash.
There's
and
a lot of models here.
Yeah, there are a lot.
Wait, what did Ray, you just come up with? Reggie. Farm of the Free, Home of the
Good-looking animals.
Good-looking animals.
So silly.
It's so true, though. Every animal I met, they should be like on the cover of some kind of magazine.
Well, I don't know how that happened, but they're all, yeah, we think they're beautiful.
Yeah.
But yeah, Johnny Cash, he's got an interesting history. He's from a local family that lives next to a Angus beef cattle farm. And they have a young daughter at the time who was, I think, 13. And she saw this baby out in the pasture next to her pasture. So they have a horse farm. And he was all alone. And I guess she noticed that, like, the mom wasn't anywhere near, wasn't coming back to him, or anything like that. And normally what happens in these big, giant cattle operations where they have such a large herd, the farmers don't have time to bottle feed these calves. And so instead, so they don't lose money, they end up just, you know, sending them to the, selling them to the veal industry to make up for lost profits or whatever. But this little girl, I guess, knew that. And she dragged him onto their property. They started bottle raising him. But basically, Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings, who's the other cow that he came with, he's also, he was being sold at an auction for veal. Kind of the same situation. His mother abandoned him. Mm-hmm. And this family went and got him from this auction. And so they had Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings, and they're bottle feeding both of them. They kind of raised them together, and eventually they got too big because they're on 3 acres of their farm.
Those are big, big animals.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. We're not used to seeing beef cattle that big because they don't let them live that long, yeah. You know, they're not manageable once they get that big. They can actually keep growing until they're about 6 per our vet. Yeah. But I think they're normally slaughtered
right now, right?
Yeah. 3 and 4.
And Cash is almost as tall as you. And how tall are you?
I'm 5'4".
Yeah.
Yeah.
And insane. He comes up to like my nose. Yeah. It's crazy.
Beasts. Yeah. So beautiful though.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. They are. They're striking. Yeah.
A lot of people think they're brothers, but they're not.
Yeah. So.
They're bonded for sure.
Yeah, they're precious in every way. Yeah. I mean, every animal and insect and being is, but you know. And so, yeah, that's kind of how we got them. They mm-hmm. contacted us through our mutual equine vet and found out about us, and we were able to take them at the time. So it worked out, yeah. And yeah, they look so different too. I mean, they're both black, but a lot of people are like, how do you tell them apart? But that's another thing. If you spend time with them, you can see it. Like, the qualities just pop out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and their personalities are completely different. Like,
yeah.
Waylon's more, like, chill and just, like, you know, gentle, whereas Cash is, like, you know, he's more, knows what he wants when he wants it. Mm-hmm. And he's the one we call, like, the GQ model because his hair is just, like, really sleek and it's shiny and like it's, it looks like he does it every morning. It's weird.
Oh.
Whereas like Waylon's like the cute, like, I just woke up this way, you know?
I woke up like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love, but it was mesmerizing as I was watching you interacting with him too. Like, you said that he knows exactly what he wants, and if he doesn't want you to pet him, he doesn't want you to pet him. And then like when you were extending your arm and you're like, can I pet you? Like, I swear, I'm pretty sure I saw him nod before you reached out and started like playing with him. It was so cool.
Yeah, it's funny. If you do the same thing to Waylon, like, he will literally bow his head because he likes to be scratched mm-hmm. right on the back of his neck. So it's funny. They'll tell you what they want. You just have to pay attention.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of us, even me as a vegan, I wasn't paying attention until, like I said, I met Ren. It's like I never paid attention to them telling me no.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I'm just going to make them like me, which is so, like, I mean, it's not good or bad. I just didn't know any better, you know, and I thought I was doing the right thing. But now that I'm so glad I had that influence because, it's like, now I pause or I try to. Like I said, I still sometimes just get caught up in the moment a lot, but it's definitely a step for sure, hopefully,
yeah.
to a better place.
That's really cool. But also like if you're doing so much work and you're like you're opening your heart so wide and you're sharing so much love that there's always going to be more room to grow. Yeah. But I definitely think it's also good to give yourself. You guys open a farm sanctuary. Okay? I'm sure emotional intelligence with animals and emotional exploration and the opposite of that will come with time as well. So
yeah.
Yeah. But also another thing that I wanted to point out is it's so cool how you get to like kind of like telling the difference between the two animals that look alike. Mm-hmm. Like if you think about it, humans look alike. Like
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
there is like, what, 7 billion people of mm-hmm. us here? Like how can you tell all of us apart? But yeah. then like when we hang out long enough and we make personal connections, this is what makes it beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to say, oh, I love people or I love whatever. But yeah. until you meet that person or those and make specific connections with those people, it doesn't really like drop, right?
Yeah.
The meaning doesn't really drop. So I feel like it's the same with animals. We can say we love animals all day long, but until we meet the animal and actually like show them love or, I don't know, like establish the personal connection, that's what makes it real.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you're so right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
I love
exactly
it. And, mm-hmm. and like establishing the farm sanctuary is such a beautiful way to like celebrate and encourage that personal connection and
mm-hmm.
kind of spread that education.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more, and I know that Carmen, you mentioned a little bit about it earlier, about what your goal is or what are you trying to do through the farm sanctuary? I know like rescuing animals is part of that, but you also mentioned that you guys are pretty well aware already that you're not going to be able to rescue all of the animals. So why are you doing the work that you do today, and how does it frame into the your kind of activism that you do?
Yeah. Well, it was going in one direction. And I'm going to talk about Renhurst a lot because as soon as we met her, it's like we kind of went in a slightly different direction. Because now, well, before we met Ren, we knew we couldn't save all the animals. And we, you know, we were like, we need to have, you know, maximum number of what we're going to be able to do. And our focus needs to be on education because that's how you can indirectly save way more animals. Like if one person goes vegan, what that saves like what is it like 50 animals a year or something like that? Whereas if we just save one animal, well, it's the whole life for that one animal. Yes. And that is very, very important. But if you focus on more education, you can save way more animals indirectly. And since we only have 10 acres and so many resources and so much money, like it's really important for our focus to be not so much on the animals and on that, the education. But then when we met Ren, it was more of like this way of being able to, this teaching people to basically grow themselves like spiritually and I'm not even doing it justice. Like I invite you to interview her because she's, yeah, amazing. But anyways, basically challenging people to grow themselves and like learn self-love and more self-compassion and stuff like that. And from a place of like, just like inner peace and like calm and like understanding and stuff like that. Like hopefully you can spread that to your other relationships and people like that and really be the change that you want to be. You hear people talking about it all the time, but then like, I mean, I still fight with Greg and he's vegan. Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, what are we fighting about? There's something else that's missing. You know what I mean? And it's really like this self-work that we need to do. So we are trying to like build a center one day in the future. We get more donations, hopefully. Take more of the focus off the animals. So the burden's not so much on them. They're going to be here. And of course, we're going to educate people about their lives and like, you know, the alternative to living on a sanctuary, what it could be like for them.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the weight is really going to be on people to who want to come and like better themselves and hopefully change the world by literally being the change. And it starts with us. We have a lot of work to do, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's kind of where we're trying to head.
I love that. I don't think I've ever heard that from the people who are in the farm sanctuary environment or like even the vegans. It's so cool because it's applying, I think a lot of the one of the points that it's easy to get lost in, and you mentioned at the beginning when you become vegan at the beginning and you're so passionate, but you also have so much anger because it's like you've been protecting yourself from all this information for so long, or maybe you've been whatever misguided or miseducated, it doesn't matter, but then like the doors open and you're like, oh my god, I've been contributing to this like cruelty my whole life, and then you're just gonna want to climb on the mountain and yell about it to everybody. Yeah. And like force people to go vegan. Yeah, exactly. Because you think it's a solution, and it is, but what I'm learning for myself is that you cannot make other people do anything or change their mind. They'll change their mind whenever they're ready. The best thing you can do is to do your best at shining your light and yes. showing and leading by example. Kind
that's
of being
what
change.
I was trying to say. Lead by example.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could not come up with that.
No,
thank you
did
you.
Say yeah. like being the change is yeah. exactly what it is. And it's also easy to forget that, yeah, we want to be kind and compassionate to the animals, but we also still have to be kind and compassionate to other people.
Right.
And being gentle with them and kind with them as they are still navigating their way through whatever, their own education and discovering their own truth is right. also a part of it.
Yeah.
So it's so cool that you're creating this farm sanctuary and you're using this land to help animals, but more importantly you're not just doing it just only for the sake of animals, but also create the environment where people can come, heal, learn about the animals, establish those personal connections with them, but also learn how to practice self-compassion to other people and to themselves too. That's such a cool concept.
Yeah, I mean, we have so much to thank her for and a lot of work to do. I think our best way of thanking her is actually, you know, doing more of it. So
what were some of your brightest moments so far related to your work with farm or with of the free, something that comes to mind, either animals or events or people that come volunteer here?
Oh my god,
there's
the
so
volunteers.
Many amazing volunteers.
Jesus.
Yeah. Rather than, you know, whether they be consistent or just, you know, one or two time volunteers, I mean, they're all amazing.
Yeah.
But I think it's amazing that we got Carmen to work here full time. Cause I mean, it was so stressful, for the first year and a half with both of us working full time,
other jobs,
like Carmen was
dragging.
Yeah. So I mean, with, 14 animals, maybe we had in our care, farm animals, we were both still working full time, you know, in the morning we'd split the morning routines of like Carmen or I going outside to do the farm animals and one of us taking care of all the inside dogs and cats and getting ready for work, and then we'd both leave. And, you know, obviously the animals, you know, don't need 24/7 care, thankfully. But
at that point anyway.
Well, yeah, at that point now, you know, we have some that do, but
you cannot imagine.
Yeah, and Carmen was driving to Johns Creek, which is like over an hour from here.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And me going to Athens, which is like half an hour, and you know, and I can work from home sometimes, but you know, still it was just like very overwhelming and stressful. And getting her to be full time now for the nonprofit, I think, is a huge win. So
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
yeah.
I would agree with that. That was really, really helpful. For the animals, for us, like
yeah.
for our sanity, everything.
I think the other one's probably getting Rudy and Sarah reunited.
Yeah. I mean, all of them obviously have impacted us in so many ways. But it was really cool to reunite Rudy, one of our sheep, who's about 7 now, with his mom, who's about 12.
Yeah.
Because they were separated probably for like a year and a half. When you're only able to rescue Rudy
yeah.
in the beginning, where we got him from. She didn't want to give up his mom either, but she was worried that because his mom, Sarah, was friends with another sheep that she had there who had cancer, and they were really bonded, and she wanted Sarah to stay with her until, I guess, her friend passed, but she needed to get rid of Rudy, and we were the best option for that because she knew he wasn't going to be sold for meat or wool or anything like that. So we got him and helped her with that, and then about a year and a half later, we reached out to check in and see how Sarah was. And she was like, she's doing okay, but her friend passed away. And we're like, oh, we're so sorry to hear that. And then a few hours later, she was like, would you guys want to take her? And we're like, absolutely. Like, absolutely. So we got her, and then they've been I don't know if they're happy, but they've been hanging out together ever since. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And
what did it look like when they first got reunited after that?
I think there was kind of just like hesitation, but then like after like literally minutes, they started just grazing and kind of they've always been within like a few feet of each other. And if like, it's really cool. If Sarah can't see Rudy, you'll hear baa, like if he's like behind the wall or something like that. Yeah. She'll like baa and like kind of look for him. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she actually did that yesterday when I was out there. Rudy was behind the shed.
Yeah.
And Sarah couldn't see him, and I heard her baaing, yeah. And then she like got closer to where she could see him, and she stopped.
Yeah. So.
This is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really a really big moment. I mean, like I said, they're all just fascinating in their own unique ways, and it doesn't even matter if they're fascinating or not. They just deserve so much better, and they deserve to be whatever they want. You know, not what we want them to be.
What is your, do you have like a long-term vision for Farm of the Free?
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you agree on that?
Well, yeah, yeah, we just did a business plan,
so it's all like written out and it's really long. I don't want to read it on here.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to read the whole business plan, but to sum it up, I mean, the long-term goal is to have, you know, I think it was like 50 animals.
That's max. Though.
Max.
That's like the max. Like
50 animals max.
That would be better. We do plan on having flocks for each of the roosters. Mm-hmm. So right now we have 5 roosters. Only one of them is with a flock right now. So we hope to, you know, be able to rescue more hens and they actually become friends with each other. We don't know if that'll happen. I mean, who knows? You can't force anybody to like each other. But they have a lot of space. So hopefully if they need to get away from each other, they can. But that's one of the goals.
Couple rescued industrial pigs.
That's probably further down the line because we'd have to do a lot of fencing. Pigs are really, really smart and they are strong. And so you have to have like really specialized fencing to keep them in. So that's probably like, I don't know, I would say like 2 to 5 years out.
Long term.
No, that's good. I mean, 100 years out, whatever you want to see. What it is like your dream or your goal for Farm of the Free to be.
Okay. Yeah, so ultimately, so yeah, but the center really is what
the center is the biggest focus because, and then having a full staff.
Yeah. And yeah, a full staff meaning Greg works here and then 2 employees, maybe another full time and another part time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's pretty much it. And so we hope to have like events here, all those self-care classes I was talking about.
Yeah.
Yoga, meditation, nonviolent communication classes, you know, to learn how to really, you know, speak in a nonviolent way. Cause I mean, stuff comes out of my mouth all the time and it's just like, and I know meditation will really help with that. If you're mindful, you might not even need nonviolent communication classes. But we will offer stuff for every stage to help people. You know what I mean?
And cooking classes too.
Vegan cooking classes. So people can learn like, oh, okay. Like I want to make this change, but how do I do it? And it's like, well, here you go.
Yeah.
And then Greg's been collecting a bunch of like alternative, empty, food product boxes in like containers and jars.
No, I didn't collect all of those. That makes me look like a fat.
No, but we.
Well, nobody can see that. So good for you.
Yeah, there's a lot that we other people contributed to.
That's what I'm saying. It was his idea. So he's been gathering all these things and he's going to make a pantry and like have that on display. So people are like, hey, well, what do I do if I want to eat? You know, I need milk or I need a pizza or something like that.
Yeah,
I was like, well,
or
there's
eggs,
all these options.
You know, there's all, mm-hmm. yeah, there's all sorts of alternatives that we can have on display in this vegan pantry in our education center that we're going to have. So
I love it.
Yeah. And yeah, the cooking classes I think will be really fun because we'll have like a kitchen set up where, you know, people can sit and watch whoever's doing the cooking and teaching and stuff. And it will be from like, entry level, you know, easy, you know, vegan meals to like raw to no oil, you know, whole food plant-based, like all sorts of different, you know, things and everything, sweet, you know, dessert cooking classes.
Yeah. But for health reasons, I do want to urge people to like use that food for transition.
Yeah.
And I'm really, I'm talking to myself when I say this, because I still indulge in way too many like processed and junk vegan foods. But yeah, for health purposes, we will hopefully put more of emphasis on whole food plant-based diet, like where you're eating the whole actual food, less processed.
No, absolutely. So obviously you're passionate about farm sanctuaries in general, right? You open and you operate one. If listeners are somewhere close by, they can come by, please come in. But if they're not, why do you think it's important for somebody to come and visit the farm sanctuary?
I mean, I definitely encourage people to visit farm sanctuaries over zoos or petting zoos and stuff.
Especially people that don't have experience around animals. Let me back up. First, once we get the center done, to have a place where everybody feels welcome. Like, it doesn't matter what ethnicity you are, what color you are, what your beliefs are, what your gender you want to, ascribe yourself to. Everybody's welcome here. Maybe see animals in a different light than they would normally expect. Because, most people don't get to be around farm animals. They only see dogs or cats. And, if they're curious, I would say, go check them out, And see, you might be surprised how, more complex they actually are.
Yeah, I think it's easy to assume. And as you said, it's all about meeting that animal. And, many people, have never seen a live chicken or a live cow. Yeah. And, seeing that and putting the two and two together and be like, oh, that is my bacon?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not going to, you're not going to like bacon as much. Or maybe you just reconsider next time you eat bacon.
Yeah, and that actually makes me think of something else. And there's a difference between, a chicken that's, in, for instance, a situation where they're being raised for meat. And then, versus a chicken that's, free to the best of our ability to live out their life how they want to. I think you'll see a difference in their personalities. Who knows? You might still have I think it's just hard for a chicken in a situation where they're being raised or confined, for their body parts, whatever it is, to really reach their full potential. And, And, maybe they're not really doing that here, but I feel like here they at least have a little bit more wiggle room to do so, or at any other farm sanctuary, where they don't have those expectations.
It just makes me really sad to think about when people think about farm animals and they're like, oh, that's how all animals are in their natural environment. Mm-mm. Well, think about if you took people and they had no education and they would be fed shitty food in confined spaces, had no normal interaction and just be kept star crazy, what kind of intellect would you get from people? What do you expect from animals who have horrible lives and then are slaughtered for meat?
That's a really good
comparison. That's why they're scared of
comparison.
People. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry for taking all the time from you.
It's us.
I have one question that's going to be my last question. Before I ask that, is there anything else that you want to talk about that we haven't mentioned, or any last parting words of wisdom that you have?
I just like to thank our board. I always like to thank our board because they keep us sane.
Yeah.
And they help help us,
keep the nonprofit going.
Yeah, and figure out tough decisions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they're just so supportive and just wonderful people, all of them, and our past board members too. And all of our supporters, whether they're volunteers, whether they're just people that send encouraging words, and then of course our donors too, it's what makes this work, and we couldn't do it without any of them. So
we're thankful for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I just want to add is that obviously we've only been here for a little over 2 years, so we still have so much growth going on, and things planned and buildings to build and everything. So I think over the next few years, it's going to just get better. So
it's already pretty amazing. I really love spending time here and seeing all the animals. They're obviously very well taken care of and very well respected. So it's beautiful to see.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. So the name of my podcast is Follow Your Kind. And you probably heard me describe it before, or maybe not, but the reason it's called Follow Your Kind is my personal mission and side hustle is to help people that I admire define and share what kindness means to them. So maybe other people can pick that up and maybe redefine it for themselves, but be more intentional about following their own kindness. So I always love to ask the question, but maybe because for different people it may mean something different, or at least it's still fun to watch people figure it out and try to explain it. So what does kindness mean to you?
Doing the best you can.
It can be something so small as just like a smile, basically giving beings the benefit of the doubt, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it comes in many forms. Now I'm learning that like even boundaries can be kind, you know, like setting boundaries. Yeah. Like, so I mean, that's a hard question, but I guess generally speaking, yeah, just doing the best you can where you're at. And
that's what I said.
I know. It's good. It's a good answer.
I love it.
I love it. There's a lot to it.
Thank you so much for your time and for all your work that you do. And we'll make sure to include all of the links for Farm of the Free in the show notes so people can check you guys out, support you if they want or come visit. And and good luck. And I'm sure I'll hear you back here in a few years talking about your 50 animals and educational center.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for having us. Yeah.